This is Winifred Lewis, and I'm interviewing
Nicola Belvin from La Trobe University. So I am a researcher and lecturer at La Trobe University and also a sessional lecturer at Victoria University in conflict and dispute resolution.
That's great. And tell us a little bit about your background.
So I came into to think of myself as a peace psychologist when I was completing my doctorate of organisational psychology at the University of Melbourne, and the International Conflict Resolution Centre, which was run by Di Bretherton at the time, was there, and its work totally appealed to me. It appealed to my values, and I got very much involved, and it changed where I wanted to go.
How do you make time to do your peace psych work?
So, since I became involved with the International Conflict Resolution Centre, I became very much involved in work like conflict resolution, mediation, and those type of skills. And that has been the type of work that I've done as paid work. So when I finished my doctorate, I got a job as a researcher at the Australian Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies. So I started out as a casual research assistant and eventually got an associate lecturer position. And that has been where most of the money, I suppose, in this area comes from. And I still see that related to peace psychology, because I'm still using research skills, I'm using the listening skills that you learn as a psychologist.
Yeah, definitely.
But there are also projects which I do in my own time. So, for example, the work that I do on reconciliation, I have largely done in my own time on top of my day-to-day job.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about that.
So, for a long time, I have been concerned about the situation in Australia in terms of how the Indigenous people in this country are treated. I see it as the biggest conflict that our country faces and has faced, and it's an ongoing conflict that hasn't been resolved. So when I did my doctorate thesis, I looked at the way non-Indigenous people perpetuate the stereotypes of Aboriginal Australians and how that can be changed. And since then, I have followed up in this area by research asking Indigenous Australians, in this case, of what they would like to see in reconciliation. So we've recently completed that study and presented it, and the approach was to listen to Indigenous voices and ask about the next steps in reconciliation. And the method we used in this, which was open interview, open-ended questions, elicitative interviews on the participants' territory, we believed is very much in line with the ethics or ethos of peace psychology. You know, ask the people what they want, collect information from the groups that don't often get the voice, and try to use the results to make some sort of a change.
Oh, yeah.
To structural inequalities and something.
I think our listeners would agree too, and I think our listeners would also want to know, what are the next steps towards reconciliation according to Indigenous Australians?
Sure.
I know we only have 15 minutes or whatever, but if you're giving us the short version,
I'll
what
give
did
you
they
the
say?
Short version. So the study looked at the apology by Prime Minister Rudd in February 2008, and has that assisted in reconciliation, and what are the next steps? And in summary, the themes was that yes, it was a good step, but action is needed. And the apology will be judged on the action that follows. At the moment, there hasn't been much action. The Northern Territory emergency response is in place. So the next steps that the participants, the Indigenous Australians we interviewed, wanted to see were changes at all levels, from the grassroots, people being less stereotypical in the way they treat them, you know, better attitudes, to education in schools about the history of Australia, and then all to services that are provided in a way that suits Indigenous Australians, and then at the political level, changes such as having a treaty, having Aboriginal representation in government, and some people even talked about Australia becoming a republic and cutting off from the dark history of colonialism. So
yeah.
Basically, next steps are changes at all levels and done in a way that includes Aboriginal people in the decision making.
Yeah.
And not just includes, but follows what they want.
Yeah. Great. So you've talked about your reconciliation and peace psych work and how some of that was funded in your former work with ACPACS. In your current work as a sessional academic and as a lecturer, is peace psych integrated into your paid research and teaching, or do you find you have to squeeze it in at the margins?
Well, I teach conflict resolution, dispute resolution, and my research is in mediation with multicultural communities.
So those are all directly relevant.
I would say they are directly relevant.
And how could someone who is a student interested in those topics, you know, find a career in that area? What advice would you give to them?
So I think it's important to start off with interest groups or centres that offer this. I started out as an intern. I did an internship at the International Conflict Resolution Centre. I did one at the UN in New York. And, you know, making those connections and showing your interest is important. And then I find that the peace psychology conflict resolution community is quite tight-knit because we have very similar values. And then once you do that, your lecturers will start giving you, research assistant work, and that you may be able to do an internship somewhere else and so on. But it's important to keep in mind that peace psychology is not just in academia. That a peace psychologist I've worked with at UNICEF has got a fantastic career as a peace psychologist. You know, she's a child protection officer. She's got a PhD in psychology.
Great.
And she uses that knowledge to go around the world and train people and so on.
Well, that leads into the question that we have here. What kinds of personal qualities and professional skills have been most valuable to you, or do you see as valuable? So training in clinical psych, you reckon, is useful, or in academic social? Or
I think so. I mainly think in this area I use my training in social psychology and the theories from that.
Yeah.
I see them as most applicable to resolving conflict with groups. But the counselling techniques, the active listening and so on, is extremely important in when you do mediations or you run workshops and you try to get people to listen and so on. So there are lots of skills from psychology which are useful. And I find the research skills and the design of methodologies very important in designing evaluation studies and so on.
Yeah, fabulous. Speaking as a methods prof, that's great.
Yeah.
What about personal qualities? People mention things like persistence is vital. What do you think?
I think definitely a belief in this area. I think, you know, again, because we are a close community, and I think what keeps us close is that we have this belief that we want to make this world a better place. It may sound idealistic, but that's the strongest thing that will keep you at this and that will keep you working even if you maybe don't have the funding and so on. So I think you've got to be really convinced that this is what you want to do, that you want to make things better for other people, you know, fight inequality, give a voice to groups that are minorities and so on. So I think that's the most important personal quality.
Yeah. And how does doing the work change you as a person and as a psychologist? Are there ways that you can think of where it's changed how you live your life?
I think it has really made me, in terms of psychology and the things you learn in your degree, which I often tend to say this applies to human beings. I think working across cultural contexts makes you question that. And it makes you wonder how much about human beings is kind of universal and how much is context specific or culture specific. Can you repeat the question?
how it's changed you as a person and as a psychologist?
And as a person, it has changed me by making me more humble and modest, making me go to the source, go to the people for the information, and really use my research skills in collecting data to inform what I do. So rather than going somewhere as an expert with this degree, going in there as someone who wants to learn from others and then maybe use what I know to assist whatever process is going on.
Yeah, which is such a good message as well. I mean, I hear the bell in the background. I know we're running short of time, but I guess if I look across the questions in terms of what we haven't talked about, one of them that we might not have touched on as much is, you know, whether there are things that you'd like to do with your work, research, and teaching that you haven't found time for yet. What do you see as a kind of your big yearning, where you want to take this next, or where you're not sure if you'll take it, but it'd be great to go?
My next step is actually to have a break from academia for a while and go and work for the UN or another non-government organization. And the reason for that is that in teaching conflict resolution, I often find that students want the practical knowledge, and I personally want the practical knowledge. I want to see how this works in the field. And my dream is to have a career in the field and then bring it back to academia and somehow, you know, marry up the two where one informs the other.
That's a totally great dream.
So I'll never be an expert in one or the other, but maybe there is some space for,
I look forward to the interview, which we can post online when you get back from that. That's awesome.
Thanks
so much, Nicola.
Thank you, Winifred.